Okay, I'm all in.
This is the only poker show in St. Louis radio.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please.
With the only St. Louisan to make it to the final table of the 2008 World Series of Poker main event.
Shuffle up the deal.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan, KFNS.
And welcome to the show, which tonight is not coming to you from downtown St. Louis, but from the Whitmore Country Club in St. Charles, Missouri. We'll explain why in just a moment. First, let me tell you about a couple of guests we've got coming up on the show tonight. In the second segment of the show, we'll have Joe Cada, who is one of this year's November 9, who, if he were to go on and win the whole main event, could become the youngest guy to ever win the main event of the World Series of Poker, passing Peter Eastgate, who last year passed Phil Hellmuth. So Joe will join us in about 10 or 15 minutes. Then later on, who respectively were the last woman standing in the 2007 and 2008 main event of the World Series of Poker. They have teamed up now to go on The Amazing Race, which debuts its new season this Sunday on CBS TV, and they will join us. And, of course, our contributor, Joe, the poker coach McGowan, will join us a little bit later on. I'm Paul Harris. Dennis is here with me as well. And explain why we're here at the Whitmore Country Club this afternoon.
Well, actually, we came out here to support one of my favorite charities. It's the Basket of Hope. They had a fundraiser out here, included a golf tournament, included a little live auction that we had here, included some silent auction items, and it was just a great time. We had half a dozen of the Rams players that came out here. We had half a dozen of the Cardinal retired ones. You see Josh Brown up there sparring back and forth with Andy Bennett up there, both of them trying to pretend they're announcers.
Yep, Josh Brown, the Rams kicker, currently the point leader on the team. Right?
This is true. For all five kicks he's had to do all this year in two games. So, yeah, he is wanting to get a lot more practice, let's put it that way. But anyhow, they came out here, they supported this. If you don't know what it is, the Basket of Hope is something that is really a very simple concept. What we do is we put together baskets of toys and goodies and things of encouragement, and then we take them to these kids that are in the hospital for whatever particular reason.
Mostly for cancer.
Granted. But for whatever reason, they are stuck in the hospital, especially over a Christmas or an Easter or something like that. At the very beginning of this, they brought up a young gentleman that... by the name of Christopher. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how old Christopher was. What he looked, 9-year-old, 10-year-old,
yeah,
something
nine,
like that,
yeah.
Whatever. He stood up there, just basically talked from the heart for a moment, and pretty much choked up everybody in the room.
Yeah.
It was pretty amazing on this. And all he was doing was saying, thank you for taking the time out of your life to come and visit me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that's all it was.
Yep.
And it meant that much to him. So it was just... amazing, I'll tell you that.
And you are one of the major sponsors of this, along with our sponsor, Lumiere
Absolutely.
Place
That's
Casino
I'm
and
proud
Hotel.
To be with these guys.
And our friend Tony Russo, who's the assistant casino manager at Lumiere, mm-hmm. is out here this afternoon as well and played in the golf tournament today. Hi, Tony. How are you?
Hey, Paul. Dennis, thanks a lot. Oh, great time. Yeah. Great time. I'm glad we got it in. I didn't think with the rain we were going to be able to get it in. Yeah. But big thanks to Jim Swan of our player development department, our director. I think we sponsored five teams, which I think Dennis also sponsored.
I sponsored five teams. So yeah.
And a nice little get together here, and same thing Dennis was talking about, Chris. When Chris came up there,
it was unreal.
I had tears in my eyes, man.
Yeah.
So
yeah. I've said many times, anybody who does anything to help a sick kid is doing something noble.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's why it's a terrific charity here.
Yeah. Well, and you know what really crossed my mind? I'm sitting there and I'm. I've played golf with Andy Benison. He's a super guy, and he does this every year, and Kurt Warner and those guys played in it last year. But I'm thinking to myself, you got Josh Brown up there. You have Andy Benison up there, and you had the athletes that were here, and Scott Terry was here, and a number of professional athletes. And you're sitting there, and this young kid comes up, and he talks from the heart. And I'm thinking to myself, if you could take, the courage and the strength and the fight that these kids have and put that and bottle that into it, man, it blows away what the the heart the professional athletes have alone and what they do for these kids. So
in his short life, he's probably been through more than the three of us combined, and yet he stands up with a smile on his face and says how lucky he is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It was incredible.
It was terrific. I got a question for you guys about Andy Bennett. Since he was a relief pitcher for so many years, does he only come in and hit like from the 15th hole on?
Andy was a starting pitcher.
Yeah.
Andy was starting pitcher. Him and his brother Alan both were starters.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I think Alan did some relief pitching. Now, Scott Terry, relief pitcher. Yep.
Well, if he's a starting pitcher, then you pull him about the eighth hole, right?
Yeah. Well, it was an interesting lineup. They put Matheny on there, and then they hit to him. So, you know.
I like that a lot. All right. Well, we're happy to be here and happy to be supporting it. And, Tony, thank you and Lumiere for supporting the cause as well.
Thanks a lot, guys, and thanks for all your support. And once again, thanks again, Jim Swan, and congratulations, Basket of Hope.
All right.
I think they did a good job of it, and hopefully we'll be here next year.
Yep. Terrific.
Absolutely.
And by the way, I don't know about you, but I will be in the Lumiere Place poker room a little bit later on tonight because of that juicy game that goes on every Tuesday when we're usually there. I mean, as much as I love this charity, I'm racing right out of here afterwards to go down there and get involved.
It's amazing. I kept talking to all the guys from the Rams and everything. I kept saying, what are you doing tonight, guys?
Come on down.
You know, come on down.
get these big big paycheck pro athletes down there, and let's play some poker. This is a poker show, after all, so let's talk a little bit about what's coming up. Well, let's just talk about something that just finished up, which was the World Championship of Online Poker, the WCOOP, as we call it. Dennis, played in the main event on Sunday, and I hear you went out on a horrible bad beat. Is that true?
Absolutely was. I guess it was being blogged about 20 seconds after it ended on that. All right, we might as well go through this whole thing.
Okay.
We started out, and there wasn't a huge number in it. I don't know, 2400. Lost about two-thirds of the field. Excuse me, we're down to about 800.
You're getting choked up just thinking about it.
Yeah, well, it was. This one's going to take a while. I didn't sleep a whole lot that night. Get down to that level. There's about a third of the field left, about 800. Their payouts are at about 300. I mean, just to make the payoff, you know, was 8,000 or 9,000 on it. So, you know, and the first prize in this was $1.7 million on it. So this was a major, major tournament. I'd fought back from being down to about 6,000. I was up to about 35,000. Chip average was around 50. Woke up with ace-king of clubs in the small blind. Bidding goes around all the way to the gentleman that's just to the right of the dealer. He makes it 1,500. Shoot, I can't even talk here. 1,500.
Lines are 350 and 700, and he makes it 1,500.
Correct. So just a little over a double raise. No big deal with that. A two exit. I looked at my hand. I raised it to 4,200, so I basically 3X'd him almost, two and a half on that. The big blind then folded, went back around to him. He smooth called.
Okay.
Well, we'll see a flop, all right? Flop came king and two rags.
Beautiful.
Like an 8-5, something like that.
Beautiful.
All right. Now, at this stage, I'm still trying to build my chips up. This gentleman has about 100,000. I'm not going to slow play, not going to do anything like that. I went ahead and I made about a 60-70% of the pot bid, about $6,000.
Okay.
There's about 9 in it.
All right.
Alrighty. Goes around to him, smooth calls again.
Okay, maybe he's thinking you're just making a continuation bet.
Absolutely,
there.
Absolutely, the whole bit.
Who knows?
Who knows on this thing? Turn card is a second club on the board.
Uh-huh.
I now have top pair, I have top kicker, and I have the nut flush draw on this. I have 25K left. There's 21K in the pot. It's time to take it down.
You got one move.
That's basically it in this type of a tournament. You don't want to see that river.
You're not going to slow play.
Not going to slow play the whole bit like that.
Maybe the guy's got king, queen. Yep. Who knows what he's got there.
If he flopped the miracle and has a set, then I'm out and that's it.
Right, that's poker.
But I'm rolling these dice. There's no problem with it.
Okay.
Push the 25,000. Goes into the tank for a little bit. Not a long time, but goes into it for a little bit and calls me. And I'm going, oh, my gosh, what's he got, right?
Yeah.
Turned over a king, 10 of hearts. So he has top pair.
So he had min-raised pre-flop with king 10 of hearts in the cutoff seat and then had called your re-raise pre-flop with the king 10 of hearts. He's got position.
Correct.
He flops a king. Maybe he thinks you're making a continuation
bet.
Maybe he thinks you're making a move.
Right.
So he's calling you there with a king, medium kicker.
The only thing I can figure is that he put me on a pair and I was a little short stacked and I might shove with queens or jacks, something like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's possible, I guess, right? But this is going to cost him a little over a third of his chips. The pot then was over 70,000. Chip average was 50 at this time, would have put me in the top 200 of the tournament. I was I was dancing a jig when he turned those two cards over.
Yeah.
And it didn't last long. It was a very, very short dance. He only had two outs because also the 10 of clubs would have given me the nut flush.
Right.
So he had a 5% chance versus my 95.
You're a 19-1 favorite, and it's 10 comes
absolutely
on the river.
10 of diamonds. Yeah. So anyhow, congratulations. I won't repeat what I said then. So.
Now I just want to reverse this for a second because
sure.
I know how hard it is to take a bad beat like that where you're a 19-1 favorite.
Yeah.
But if he does think that you're making these moves with queens and that his king is good, which is really one of the only explanations I can put in there for what he's doing.
Yeah.
He figured you for a continuation bet, figures you're trying to make a move there. He never played back at you.
Never once. He can't put me on a weaker king. I don't know what else he could put me on, honestly. A draw, a club draw? Well, maybe, but I'm not shoving out there the last 25K on a club draw.
Mm-hmm. Ace, queen of clubs maybe he puts you on?
I don't know. I'm assuming he thought I had a smaller pair, and I was trying to take the pot down.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyhow, he made a great call.
Great call for him.
I can't even say that.
Great call for him. Not so much for you. And so you were out of the main event. Well, listen to this hand. When it finally got down to it, a guy by the name of Yevgeny Timoshenko won the W-Coupe and the $1.7 million. But I want to mention a hand that he played when they got down to four-handed. One of the other guys at the table was a guy named Dan Kelly, who the night before had won the high roller horse event in the W-Coupe. So he'd been having a pretty good weekend.
Oh, heck yes.
There are four players left, and Timoshenko is the chip leader at this point. And the two of them get into a raising war pre-flop that led to Dan Kelly, five betting all in with a pair of tens. And Timoshenko called with his pair of kings.
Oh.
Now, five betting with a pair of tens. I know you're shorthanded. I know you're down to four-handed in a tournament like that. I don't know what the blinds were like, but you're up against the chip leader there, and do you really five bet somebody all in with a pair of tens?
I mean, I didn't see what the betting pattern was. I didn't see how it went back and forth. There's a lot of things that I don't see. But at this stage, if the betting went back and forth a couple of different times, I mean, you got to assume with your tens, the best you're doing is racing there. The guy's got ace, king, ace, queen, you know, something like that.
Mm-hmm. At worst, you're a 4-1 dog.
Yeah.
He's got the overpair.
Absolutely.
Overpair. Jacks, queens, kings, or aces.
I mean, I it's hard for me to believe that you'd put him on 8-7-6 or something, that you've got him dominated.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's very questionable. Evidently, it worked.
No, it didn't work.
Oh.
The king flopped, and Dan Kelly was pretty much done.
And that was it.
And then Timoshenko went on and won the whole thing. He eventually was a 3-1 chip leader, and he made quick work of the guy he was heads up with in 18 hands and ended up winning the whole thing.
Yeah, I have to admit, after my 10-10 fiasco and everything like that, I pretty much just went off in my little closet and curled up into a ball and, sat there.
I do not blame you at all. All right, a couple of other notes here. The Commerce Casino out in Los Angeles, where you've played in the Los Angeles Poker Classic, they just had a huge event with almost 4,000 players.
Wow.
Now, except for online events, I think this is the largest number of players in a non-WSOP land-based casino tournament ever. 4,000 people.
I sure can't name anything. The only thing that, even other than the main event, I can only name the one this year that hit 6,000, the stimulus one they called it that. That 4,000 may be the, other than the main event, the second largest of anywhere.
Well, the Commerce had something interesting going on. Matt Savage was the tournament director, and he set this up as a three-day event. And if you busted out on day one or day two, you could rebuy back into the tournament.
Oh, my gosh. That's unheard of.
That is unheard of. And apparently a lot of people did, because there ended up being nearly 4,000 players in this event. Now, that seems weird to me. You and I actually talked about this back a year or so ago, the idea of the World Series of Poker having four day ones, day 1A, 1B, 1C, 1D. And moving forward from day 1A, you bust out, oh, I'm done with the. But if you can satellite back in the super satellite room or the single table satellite room there at the Rio, why can't you go back into it? Why don't more events set up that same kind of structure so you can get back in?
Well, I mean, yeah, basically you're giving a guy a double shot. There are rebuy tournaments in that. Most players don't care for them that much. It's you're sitting down, everything's even. They don't want the guy with the deepest pockets to have the best chance.
Mm.
And if you sit there and you have four-day ones and some guy buys in on all four of them, you know, that type of thing. It has bad feeling among some of the poker players, I'll have to admit.
Okay. Well, speaking of the World Series of Poker main event, Joe Cada is one of the guys who made it to this year's November 9. He'll be playing at the final table in just a few weeks, and he will join us when we come back in a moment here at the Lumiere Place Final Table. We're live at the Whitmore Country Club in St. Charles, Missouri, at a charity event for the Basket of Hope. By the way, if you'd like to find out more information about the charity, you can go to basketofhope.org, and you can sponsor a basket there for $100 and help out a sick kid. This portion of our show tonight is brought to you by Poker Stars.
Yeah, Poker Stars, that's where I play, guys. If you want to come on there and play against me, sign up for PokerStars.net, download it, and list, get it on, as they say. Anytime you want, 24/7, any kind of game, Omaha, Raz, you name it, it's there, it's ready, and it's a great time. You want to learn your game, you want to improve your game, and then you want to come out there and maybe go against somebody like Joe, get on PokerStars.net.
We'll be right back after this break on 590 The Fan KFNS and our podcast on thechipleader.com.
Closet cleaning is a worthwhile venture, clearing up usable space and resulting in items for charitable donation, like that keyboard tie. It's a win-win, but it takes a lot of energy. You should clean your closet next week and fuel up this week. For instance, carb up on the delicious pasta dishes at the House of Savoy, or meet your daily recommended dose of random cravings at the Kitchen Buffet and Bistro. To recap, eat now, clean your closet later. Now is the time for whatever turns you on at Lumiere Place. Visit LumierePlace.com for more info. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
You're at the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Welcome back to the show. We'll have Maria Ho and Tiffany Michelle, two professional poker players who are going to be on The Amazing Race new season when it starts this Sunday on CBS. They'll join us in about 10 or 15 minutes. But right now we're joined by another November Niner. Dennis made the final table in the November 9 last year. Joe Cada made it this year, making himself an instant millionaire, making $1.2 million for being one of those final nine. He will now go for the $8.5 million and the bracelet when they resume play at the final table come November 7th. And I understand he's been signed by your pals at PokerStars.
I believe so. How's it going, Joe?
Good. How are you?
Oh, I'm having a blast. I hear you're flying around a little bit, too. You getting ready for London?
Yep, I leave for London on Sunday.
Excellent. Is this your first time over there in England?
Yeah, in England. It was my first time in Europe, actually, for the Barcelona tournament.
Ah, sweet. So you kind of touched the waters now. Now you go back there to London. I was lucky enough to play in that one last year.
Are you playing in both the WSOPE and the EPT event?
No, I'm just going to be playing the High Rollers tournament out in London.
Now, that one, last year I think we had 86 people in it. Yeah, I finished 10th in that one.
Oh.
They paid nine. Let's go on to the next subject. All right. Anyhow. Yeah, you don't want to be the bubble boy on a tournament like this. I think ninth place paid $121,000 or anything like that. Well, hey, first time in London. All right. Any special plans? You taking anybody with you? You got any special things you want to see over there? Or are you just going to sit down and play some cash games?
I'm just going over there. My roommate's actually coming with me, and I have to be in L.A. Right after that. That's why I can't play in the main event out there. So I have to be in L.A. for the new poker show for that $1 million challenge against Danny Negreanu. One of my friends won a seat to that.
Excellent. All righty.
Wait, you won a seat in the PokerStars $1 million challenge?
No, one of my buddies won, and it's like they have two friends that come with you, and you have to make a two-minute video. So I said I'd do it with them, and he got picked, and I'm going out there to L.A. with him.
Well, that's just flat-out awesome. All right, so you're going up with your buddy to go against Daniel.
Yeah, well, I don't know exactly how it works, but he's going up against Daniel or something like that. I don't know how the $1 million challenge thing works.
Wait, I'm sorry. I actually said that wrong. I think Daniel's actually going to help coach you guys the first few levels of this, and you'll be against a different pro. And then at the end of it in December, if you make it that far, then you go back against your own coach. You go against Daniel and sit across the table from him. Oh, this could be awesome.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, that would be.
This is quite a year you're having. I mean, in your first WSOP, you cashed in a $1,500 event. You came in 17th. You cashed in a $2,500 event. You came in 34th. As I said, you became an instant millionaire. Not bad for your first WSOP. But interesting to me, you do not consider yourself a tournament player, right?
I mostly play cash games. I mean, I play tournaments on Sundays and the big days, so, and like W Coupes. So that's when I play tournaments. Other than that, I mostly play cash games.
Has the money that you've won this year made you play higher stakes cash games?
I moved up one level. I mean, I don't want to jump too big. The money still affects me, no different. So, I mean, I play 25-50 right now. I mean, I was playing 10-20 before. I don't want to jump up too fast.
Well, that's still a pretty good jump in actual what you're sitting down at the table with and everything.
Yeah, your bankroll's gotten a little bit bigger, yeah, so you can probably afford it, though.
Well, $25.50 can have some nice pots in it, that's for sure. All right.
Yeah,
hey, you were out in
crazy.
You were out in California there. I think Kevin was out there and Steve in the tournament out there. That was the first major one you played since the WSOP, right? That was before Barcelona?
I wasn't too happy how I played out there. I played pretty poorly. I happened to be at Steve's table right away. We were sitting right next to each other. So that was kind of funny.
I wasn't
really too happy how I played out there, and, you know, that's how the results turned out.
Well, I mean, you have up days and bad and down days, that's for sure, on it. But you evidently had a lot of up days in July, that's for sure. Yeah, congratulations again on that.
Thank you.
Actually, we played against each other for a little bit out there on it.
Yeah, so. We did.
It was
good to play against you. I'm glad I got the chance.
Speaking of opponents, during the main event, you and Phil Ivey sat at the same table for a while, I understand.
Yeah, we were at the table for about a day or so, and I was at a table on a different event, too.
What's it like for you to play against a guy who has such a reputation?
I mean, it's pretty crazy. Watching all those years on TV and knowing who Phil Ivey is and then coming out for the first series and making that far and then actually playing against the top pro. I mean, it's pretty exciting.
Do you think that a guy like Darvin Moon, who was also at that final table with you and will go in there as the chip leader with just a huge stack of chips, do you think he'll be at a disadvantage because all the other players, including you and Phil, have played so much online, and he is a guy who hasn't played much poker at all and really just had the deck hit him this summer?
I wouldn't really say he's at a disadvantage just because how many chips he has. But, I mean, we have a little advantage in just playing-wise just since we have so much experience. But with him having that stack, I mean, he's clearly the favorite over us.
Darvin's doing a little different than most of the other people. If I understand right, he's basically going off hunting for 3 weeks and going to try and disappear and get his head together and that and not playing any poker at all for the last of October and then going out there doing the interviews and sitting down and playing.
Hmm.
Now, that's how he's going to prepare for it.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely not the way I would prepare for it, but, hey, you know, each to his own. Do you have any special plans, anything special you're going to do to try and get ready for this? Because this is a massive tournament. I mean, there's huge stakes here on this.
I'm not really doing anything differently. I'm playing a lot of poker lately, which I was kind of surprised. I didn't think I was going to be playing as much as I am now. But, I mean, yeah, I've been playing a lot of poker. I'm sure that helps.
Okay. Online or live? Or do you see much difference with your style of play?
I've been playing a lot online. The W Cube just finished up. I happened to win one of the second chance events. That was for like 128 grand. That was pretty
excellent.
Nice. And I've been playing the cash games on there. So I've been doing that to help prepare myself.
Sweet.
Joe, I mentioned to our Twitter followers that you were going to be on a show tonight, and a listener named Evan emailed me and said, please ask Joe if it's true that he trash-talked Peter Eastgate when they played each other at the main event this summer about who was going to, after the year was over, hold the title as youngest main event winner ever. Is that true? Did you trash-talk Eastgate?
No, I definitely didn't trash-talk. I was just joking around. Like, we were at the same table, and I happened to have a really good stack early, and we were at the table on day three, and I was just messing around with him. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to break your record. And I wasn't being serious, and he knew, and we were just joking around.
All right, here's another question from a listener named Mike. And by the way, if you want to email us, it's always DennisPhillipsPoker@gmail.com. And to follow Dennis online, it's Dennis_Phillips on Twitter. Mike wants to know, going into the main event, did you sell pieces of yourself to some of your friends?
I had a staker for the whole series. So I was putting in all the events, and so, yeah, 50%.
Somebody who put you into all of the events for 50% of your action?
Yeah.
Oh, excellent. Actually, it's not a bad way to do it. It's a safeguard and everything. Of course, now your backer is very, very happy backer.
Yeah, so when I say you're a millionaire, you're not really a millionaire. You're a half a millionaire.
Give him a few more weeks. Yeah, just give him a few more weeks.
Here's another question from a listener named Jane, who says, I was reading about you, Joe. I know you finished day 1C as the chip leader. Were you ever all in during the main event?
No, I was never actually all in myself for the main event, which I was pretty fortunate to run that well. But, yeah, I was never all in.
Wow, that's amazing that you could get all the way in. Dennis, last year, were you ever all in during your main event? Put all your entire chip stack at risk?
Day 3 or day 4, I did shove it in there. But, uh-huh. I mean, I literally, it was the same thing like on the WCOOP main event. You didn't want the call, but yeah, you sure wouldn't shy away from it. The guy did fold, so mm-hmm. I never really was called and had all my chips at risk until I got down to less than 100 people.
Did you ever? I know you finished that day 1C as the chip leader. Did you ever have your stack at risk, even if you weren't all in? Did you get low at any point, Joe?
Yeah, I got low a few times actually. I think it was like day 6 or so. It was like the last hand of the day. And I was doing pretty well. The average was like 800,000, and I had like 1.5 million. And I took a really bad beat and like lost a huge pot. And I went in the next day with about like 600,000, and the average was like 700. I just kept on losing pots, and I was down to like 200,000. And then I got fortunate and picked up a hand, and someone moved it all in. Like, I had 160,000 right under me. And I doubled up, and I kept on. I went on a pretty good run, and I got all the way up to like 3 million. So I was close there. And then the last day, I was down to like 2 million, and someone moved all in for like 1.6 million. So I was pretty close to being all in, but actually it was never all in.
When you were losing chips there, I know this can happen to anybody who's in a tournament, and you see yourself falling below chip average. Do you start, while you're sitting there at the table and you're playing, do you start having something going on in your brain where you're not on tilt, but you're on rewind? You know what I mean? You're going back over the hands that you played and thinking, what did I do wrong there? Oh, man, I shouldn't have played this one or that one. Do you go through that?
I mean, yeah, it's pretty frustrating when you're losing chips. But, I mean, there's not really much you can do about it. You're going to lose hands. You're going to win hands. I mean, you just got to stay focused and, you know, play off, like, your image at the table and how people will perceive you. And it's all about your stack size compared to blinds. You can't really pay attention to the average or who's chip leader. You just got to pay attention to your stack size compared to the blinds.
I absolutely agree with you. So many people start panicking when they lose a mess of chips. I mean, you literally could see guys that would have 3 million at the same stage you're talking about, lose down to 1 million. They're still above chip average, but you can see panic in their eyes mm-hmm. because their stack is diminished. My gosh, I'll look at this. They don't even realize that they could have 50 big blinds or 70 big blinds yet, and there aren't any problem at all.
Well, this is the thing I've said to you for all the time that I've known you is you, Dennis, have remarkable discipline about being in a tournament and maybe losing two-thirds of your chips and still not making any desperation moves there because you realize there's still a long way to go. I still got plenty of tournament chips. I'm still doing okay right here. So I don't have to worry about that from this point on.
I mean, absolutely. In fact, even in this one, I had built up at, I don't know what day it was, day 5, day 6. They kind of run together. I'd built up to about 4 million. I lost half of mine down to 2 million. And then I lost a pot to Darvin Moon. And I lost half of my chip. I was literally down to under 1 million chips left mm-hmm. and deep in the tournament. And it was nasty. But I did make the right moves. I still kept it together. I still had a lot of big blinds. And, you know, I built back up. Eliminated. I went, at this stage, it was probably 100 people left. And I still went out 45th. So, you know.
Yeah, it was unfortunate how you went out. Ace King versus Ace King.
Yeah, I didn't really care for it much myself, I have to admit it.
Joe, tell us about your summer. You said that you had a sponsor who bought you in for the whole series. Does that mean you played a lot of events? And since you just turned 21 this year, what is it like to be a 21-year-old playing poker all summer long for the first time in Las Vegas?
Las Vegas was kind of wearing. I was excited to get out of Las Vegas. Month and a half out there is a little too long. I kind of prefer like a week or 2 weeks. But I don't know. Summer's been just like every other summer. I mean, the fame and stuff is a little different. I mean, I haven't really spent my money or anything. I continue to play poker. I still got to see what happens in November before I, you know, make any financial decisions or anything like that. I mean, it hasn't been too different.
Well, yeah, I very good, you know, waiting to make your financial plans and that. But you are going to be back at the World Series next year. Are you going to try and play all 6 weeks next year? What initial thoughts do you have? Or are you going to try and maybe split it up? Some people come out for 2 weeks, leave for two, and then come back for the last two. They kind of break it up there in the middle.
Well, I have a bunch of friends that also play professional, so we all go out in Vegas and we get a house together, and I'll probably be out there for the whole series again.
Okay, cool.
All right, last question I've got for you here is from another listener. Her name is Ellen. I'm guessing that Ellen is a mom because here's the question. I hear Joe dropped out of community college to play poker full time. What was his parents' reaction then, and what is it now that he's a poker millionaire?
Well, my mom wasn't too happy at first, but she understood.
You mean when you went and had that sit down around the kitchen table and explained that you weren't going to get your college education, that you were going to play poker online? Mom didn't jump up and say, yes, just what we hoped for.
It was more like a phone call. I was playing poker for a while, and I already had a house and everything, and I was doing really well. And, I mean, I was taking classes because I wanted to open up a business. I was taking accounting and business classes for to educate myself in those categories. And it was just interfering with poker, and poker was interfering with that. So I made a decision to play poker full-time instead of school full-time.
Mom's happier now?
Yeah, mom's happier now.
All righty.
Well, Joe, we appreciate you joining us here tonight. We look forward to seeing how you do in just a few weeks when you roll into, roll through London next week and then roll back into Vegas in November. And we also want to hear a little bit about how the Poker Stars Million Dollar Challenge TV show goes as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good luck with all of that.
I appreciate having me on the show.
Hey, Joe, I'll see you in a few days over there in London. I'll also be out there for the November 9. Good luck, and just keep playing the cards.
All right, see you soon. Thank you.
All right, take care.
Joe Cada, who will also be wearing a Poker Stars patch at the final table when the November 9 rolls around. November 7th will be the day that they sit down at the Penn & Teller Theater at the Rio to play out that final table. Thanks for joining us here at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 5-9 of the Fan KFNS and our podcast on thechipleader.com. When we come back, Maria Ho and Tiffany Michelle, two professional poker players turned amazing racers. This is the Lumiere Place Final Table.
In just two short years, World Series of Poker champ Dennis Phillips has earned over $4.5 million because Dennis knows when to hold a great deal. That's why Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room is his game room superstore. Hurry to Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room now for factory closeout deals on poker tables, craps tables, blackjack tables, 3-in-1 casino tables, and accessories. Plus, get Amini's closeout deals on complete game room packages, sale priced from just $1,995. Right now, Brunswick Billiard Game Room Suites are thousands off, and American-made pool tables are just $995. Hurry to Amini's now for blowout deals on leather sectionals, area rugs, bars, bar stools, video arcade games, and home theater seating. Hold your deal interest-free with 2-year layaway. So take a tip from Dennis. Get your great deal today at Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room, Highway 40 and Boone's Crossing in Chesterfield Valley, the home of the Copper Dome Amini's.
Now, taking you from the flop to the river, here are Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris talking poker at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan KFNS.
We are live today at the Whitmore Country Club, where Dennis took part in a big charity event for a group called Basket of Hope. And we thank you very much for listening. Before we meet our guest, this portion of the show is brought to you by One Time Apparel, the poker apparel that you should have on, whether it's T-shirts or polo shirts or baseball jerseys or the sweatshirt you may need for those cold poker rooms. What is it about poker room air conditioning? They've got it cranked up to 11. Poker room I play in, everywhere, if it could be the hottest day of the summer. This summer it was 108 degrees in Las Vegas. I had to take a sweatshirt with me wherever I went.
When you're shivering, it's much harder to fall asleep.
Well, I don't fall asleep at a cash game, which is what I play. Anyway, One Time Apparel has the sweatshirts, the pullover, and the zip-up hoodies for you, all with great original designs. They've also got hats, fitted hats and flexible hats and pink camo hats for the ladies, and all sorts of great stuff you can find on the website, onetimeapparel.com. For every poker player who's ever looked at that flop and made a big bet and maybe put all their chips at risk and said, oh, come on, one time, one time, let it hold up. Go to One Time Apparel and find the poker clothing you need. Charge it to your credit card. Use PayPal. Help out the charities that are supported by onetimeapparel.com. All right, quick little story. This summer, Dennis and I were at the Rio for the World Series of Poker, and we were lining up some people to interview, and we were recording interviews with a bunch of people, and I ran into Maria Ho in the single-table satellite room one night, and she and her friend Tiffany Michelle were there, and I said, hey, ladies, why don't you come up to the suite, and we'll do some recording tomorrow at like 11 o'clock. They were going to be in a noon event, and they said, sure, we'd love to. Okay. The next morning, I get up, and I go play in a single-table satellite, and we finally get down to three players, and these other two guys won't chop. And I say to them, I have two very attractive young women who want to come up to the suite with me right now. If you guys will just chop this thing and I can go upstairs. They didn't believe me. They didn't believe me. So we ended up not chopping it. The third guy wouldn't chop. We took him out, and the other guy and I finally did chop it. But by the time that was over, it was too late to do the interview with Tiffany and Maria, who are waiting for me in a Starbucks down the hall. So I go to them, and I apologize, and I think it might have even been Tiffany's birthday, which would have made things worse. So we never got to do that interview. Fast forward a few weeks, and I find out that Tiffany and Maria are going to be on my favorite reality show, The Amazing Race. In fact, they skipped the main event of the World Series of Poker this summer to go play with Phil Kogan and the rest of the people on The Amazing Race. So today I texted Tiffany and said, let me make it up to you. Let me have you on the show tonight. So I'm hoping that we're all set and ready to go here with Tiffany Michelle and Maria Ho. Ladies, how are you tonight?
Hi, guys.
Great. Hi.
Hey.
I apologize again for the problem this summer, and I'm really glad we could hook up with you now.
It all seemed to work out, and I like your little story. It kind of sounds like you're trying to meet up with some hookers in your hotel room.
No, the only thing I ever get in my hotel room is poker players. Tiffany, was that your birthday?
You know what? That sounds familiar. My birthday did hit during the World Series, and I feel like I remember that not only were we involved in some tournament, but I think it might have. We were trying to skip out early because I had birthday plans, so I think you might be right.
Yeah, I think that was it. All right, so The Amazing Race starts this Sunday on CBS, and I know you're restricted in how much you can talk about the show, but tell me first, was it worth missing the main event to do that?
100% it was. I mean, granted, you know, it was definitely a crazy experience and not at all what we could have expected or prepared for. But as far as missing the main event, there was never a second thought in Tiffany or my head about having to miss the main event for it. I mean, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and I got to share it with, you know, one of my best friends. So, you know, the main event's going to be there every year, and, you know, we've already put our little signature on the main event, and we're happy with what we've been able to do in the poker arena, so we definitely wanted to take that to a whole nother level with The Amazing Race. So.
Maria was the last woman standing in the main event 2 years ago. Tiffany was the last woman standing in the main event last year, and now, no matter what happens, you will be the last woman standing in The Amazing Race, because I understand you're the only all-female team, right?
Yeah, we were really surprised this season. You know, it's The Amazing Race is in its 15th season. No female team has ever won before. Last year, two cheerleaders came really close. So Maria and I were really surprised to see this season that we were the only female team. We felt a lot of pressure to represent for the women. We also knew for all the fans out there rooting to see a female team win that we had all that pressure on top of us. But we figured as the two back-to-back last women standing in the World Series of Poker main event, we're used to going head-to-head with guys all of the time, cameras on our face, playing under pressure for millions of dollars. So we felt really confident. We thought we would be a good team. And, yeah, it's going to be a little bit scary, though, to represent for the women. We did feel a lot of pressure.
Well, yeah, you've done something that I've never done. I've obviously never been on The Amazing Race. How is being because you guys are both quality poker players, how does that help you in The Amazing Race? I mean, did you put tells or reverse tells? Did you try to read these guys? I mean, how did being a poker player help you on this?
we definitely read them right off the bat. There was, you know, a period of time when, you know, we got to see everybody else, but, you know, we at that time didn't get to talk to them, didn't know who they were. And Tiffany and I had little nicknames for every single one of them. And later on, by the time we got to find out more about them and who they were and, like, where they were from and all that, we realized, like, we pegged a lot of these guys right on. And so, you know, at that point, we just realized, you know, we're going to take whatever psychological aspect that we – an edge that we have in poker and use that to our advantage on the race, because obviously being the only all-female team, we weren't here expecting that our physical stature is going to, you know, be the our best asset in this race. So there's a lot of things about poker that we try to take into this. You know, in poker, you definitely are in high pressure situations, really, really intense, and you got to be able to just be emotionally even and keep your emotions in check. So we knew that going into this, this is a game, this is a race, and at all times we must maintain composure, control of the situation, and just try not to let any of those pressures of the race get to us. And also, in poker, you get to, you know, there's a million ways to play a hand, and you have to think out what the best strategy, what the best decision to make at that point in the hand for the desired outcome. So definitely Tiffany and I looked at it as, you know, at every turn in the race, we definitely want to think through carefully what our options are, weigh out those options, and hopefully pick the best one and, you know, go with it.
I've got to ask, because I agree with you totally. We have our own nicknames for certain players, some of which we tell them what the nicknames are. Some of them we never tell them what their nickname is. Give me one. I'm dying on this thing. Give me one of your nicknames. You don't have to tell me who the player was,
well,
but give me one of the nicknames.
I don't know how much we can divulge, because you'll probably see it come about on the race, but, you know, the Harlem Globetrotters are two of those, is one of the teams this season, and they're these huge, you know, black athletic guys. And so pretty quickly off the bat, I think we, between Marie and I, you know, before we left for the race, we're like, oh, those are the Laker guys or the NBA guys. You know, it was kind of a given. It was really scary and daunting to see these huge guys that obviously physically had our butts kicked on any given day of the week. But it was a little bit easy to kind of peg, you know, what those guys did for a living.
How did you prepare for the race? Did you work out? Did you think about race strategy? Have you watched previous seasons? And did you figure out, okay, if we get to this roadblock, I'm going to do this. If we get to this detour, you're going to do that?
Exactly. Marie and I sat down. We watched a ton of amazing race footage as much as we could. We sat there. Maria one day called me. She's like, okay, I have my pages of notes from the episode that she had just watched. So we did discuss, you know, it's hard to prepare for the unknown. It's hard to prepare for a terrain that you don't know where you're going to be. It's hard to prepare for a variety of weather situations or a variety of challenges. You have no clue what you're going to be doing. So all we could do to prepare was to talk about it. Like, in this situation, what roadblock would you take? Which one would do this challenge? How would you handle this? We did both, you know, start working out a little bit more, tried to get a little bit more physically fit. We also had my dad one weekend teach us how to drive a stick shift, because we know that comes into play a lot of times.
Oh, that's good. You know what? I don't think a lot of other teams think of that, but you always get sent to some country where they don't have automatic transmissions.
Yep. And Marie and I are two 20-something girls. We've, you know, driven automatics our entire life. So that was, I kind of felt like I was 16 taking driving lessons again for my dad. And Maria was definitely the better one at the stick shift, so I tasked her with being the stick shift driver for the race, and she tasked me with the one to have to eat any of the gross stuff or jump off any high buildings. So we felt like we had a good balance between the two of us as to what we felt prepared for and what we could handle with our strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah, they always make you eat something gross. Always. And they always put you in a situation with animals. My wife and I, when we're watching the race, we kind of act like we're on the race too. And so we say, okay, well, let's pause the DVR. If we were at this detour, what would we do? And whenever there's an option involving animals, we always choose the other one.
Well, I have to tell you, for people like you who are big fans of the show and watch it at home, I think everyone sits at home and thinks it's pretty feasible. You sit there, you watch it on TV. Ultimately, a team accomplishes whatever they have to do. And so I think all the teams, hands down from this season or any other season, would say that it's 10 times harder than you picture it on TV. You know, you can't see so many. You can't see the elements on TV. You can't see how much sleep you had the night before. You can't see how heavy something is or how hot it is outside or the tension that just happened between the two teammates because one person said this to piss the other off. And so I think we were both really surprised, you know, day one of from the minute that Phil says go, we both sat there and we're like, oh, my God, this is so much looks so much easier on TV. How in the world are we going to do this?
You know, when you talk about the tension between teammates, that is one of the key things that I think has made the Amazing Race a success, is that you've got this pre-existing relationship, whether it's brother and sister or husband and wife or a couple that is, you know, their marriage is in trouble or their fraternity brothers or best friends and poker players like you. So I'm curious, since you two are so close, who broke down and yelled at the other one first?
Well, I'm going to start off by saying that, you know, Tiffany and I had a very, very, very good relationship going into this. We never, ever fought. We never had a reason to bicker. We were never, even in our own intense situations, whether it's poker-related or, you know, just other aspects of our lives, you know, we just never, ever had any time or situations occur where, you know, we felt like we had to, you know, be down each other's throats or anything. But definitely, I will say the race kind of broke that streak for us a little bit because, you know, it really is, like Tiffany just said, so much harder than it looks. And it was, as much as we did try to, you know, do all the mental and physical preparations, nothing could have ever come close to preparing us for everything that we encountered, everything that we experienced. So you know, I'll fess up a little bit and say, you know, I kind of maybe said a thing or two to Tiffany that I probably wish I didn't say or would have never said. But, but honestly, I don't feel like in the whole scheme of things, Tiffany and I really argued very much on the race. We never really had to fight so much about anything. And definitely when we were doing the challenges itself, we were always very, very supportive of each other. And that's one thing that we went in saying to each other is that, you know, no matter what happens, we need to make sure that our relationship is only going to be affected positively by this experience. And you really realize that there's no reason for it not to be affected positively because you're there with the same person 24 hours a day, you know, for a month long or for however long. And you definitely just, you know, have to realize that this is all you've got on the race. This is your entire support system. This is your best friend. This is the person that is going to help you win. This is the person that you're going to win with together, you know? So you, at no point, you know, was Tiffany and I, you know, completely hating each other. But, you know, of course we had our moments.
Yeah. Tiffany, what I'm hearing is Maria drove you crazy.
Oh, no. We felt like we were fortunate to come in as two girlfriends, two best friends, because I think there's a lot more pressure with male-female romantic teams. Almost all the other teams besides the few male-male teams were all couples. And I think there's a lot more at stake when you're going out there with your girlfriend or your husband or your wife, because there's some things that are unforgivable between a husband and a wife or a romantic couple. You know, I can't go home at the end of the night and withhold sex from Maria. You know, that's not going to work. I can't give her the silent treatment. So I think it was fortunate for us being good friends and being best friends for a long time that I feel like our relationship had less pressure. You know, people can break up. They can go on the race and hate each other and then break up. There's really no breaking up when you're good friends with somebody. So I felt like we, being the only all-female team and being best friends for as long as we have been, that was an advantage for us coming into the relationship intensity aspect of the show.
Really? Because Dennis and I only do this show 1 hour a week, and we can't stand each other. No, I'm kidding. Last question for you, ladies. Are you worried about how you'll look when the whole thing is edited and aired this Sunday, and where's the party to watch it?
Well, I'll start by saying that I've learned so much from the World Series last year with how everything was edited. But ultimately, at the end of the day, all you can do is be yourself, and you're going to be edited however you're going to be edited. Your friends and family, the people that know you, the people that have had conversations with you, I think with both Marie and I, can vouch for the quality of people that we are, the love and kindness within our heart. And at the end of the day, you know, it's an intense thing that you're going out to do. You're playing a game. I think the gloves come off when you're in a competition field. It's not like we're all out there handing out Christmas presents, giving hugs and singing Christmas carols, which is very beautiful and fun and sweet and bubbly. So it's a competition. People have to win and lose. It's not fun, you know. People get pissed off when they win and lose. Things get intense. So I think that, you know, we're just hoping to represent poker players in the best light possible. We're hoping to go out there and kick butt. But at the end of the day, you can only really be accountable to yourself and the people around you that you know. And TV is going to show you however they will. Hopefully, however they edit us is going to be enjoyable for everyone to watch.
And Maria, the party's at your house?
I'm sorry?
The party is at your house?
Yeah, we're definitely going to be having a party to get our friends and family together. And, you know, it's kind of going to be interesting to get to watch it at the same time as everybody else. And as far as, you know, how we're going to come off and be perceived on this show, I think that like Tiffany said, I mean, all we could do was, you know, we really wanted to represent not just us, but poker in a really, really positive light. And, you know, just the whole being strong female thing, you know, sometimes people tend to see aggressive females as, you know, or highly competitive females as, you know, take it as a negative thing and something that it's really not. And you know, we can't do anything about that. And ultimately, like she said, we can only be accountable to ourselves and the people around us that we care about, that care about us, that support us. And, you know, of course, we hope that, you know, we don't look like, you know, something that we don't want to look like on TV. But you can't really worry too much about that. And you know, I feel like we did our best to be who we are. And hopefully people understand that at the end of the day, this was a highly, highly competitive and high-pressure situation. And I'm pretty sure that nobody, you know, thinks that they're going to come off like an angel or like the perfect person in America's Sweetheart when they're in a situation like that. So.
Well, I'll be interested to talk to you again after the whole show airs, and we'll see how you feel about how you looked. I do know one thing that I know one thing for sure. You can't possibly lose to Joan Rivers.
Thank God.
Ladies, yeah, thank you.
Let me tell you what, Joan Rivers would not have made it probably the first hour of that game, so at least we've got that on her.
You're two poker players. Ladies, we appreciate your time tonight. Thanks for joining us. Good luck on the race. You already know how you did, but for those of us who will be watching it, I appreciate you joining us here.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Maria Ho and Tiffany Michelle joining us at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan KFNS and our podcast on thechipleader.com. I'm Paul Harris with Dennis Phillips, a spokesperson for our sponsor for this hour, Reactor Watches.
Yeah, Reactor Watches, the watch that I wear. I was out there playing golf today. I was playing with a number of the other athletes, and we all were talking about Mike Matheny was wearing a Reactor watch. A number of them were. You can go out there. You don't have to worry about it. It is that durable. Leave it on your wrist. Have some fun. Just totally ignore it. You're not going to tear up this watch. It is the best made, the highest quality watch that you can do, and they will stand it up against any brand, Swiss made, whatever, because this Reactor watch is the best one in the world. And if there ever is that rare occasion when something would happen to it, they will give you unconditional repair to it, no cost. That's how much they stand behind their product. Reactor Watch, guys, I'm telling you, there is no better.
We're back with more of the Lumiere Place Final Table and the poker coach, Joe McGowan, right after this.
Closet cleaning is a worthwhile venture, clearing up usable space and resulting in items for charitable donation, like that keyboard tie. It's a win-win, but it takes a lot of energy. You should clean your closet next week and fuel up this week. For instance, carb up on the delicious pasta dishes at the House of Savoy, or meet your daily recommended dose of random cravings at the Kitchen Buffet and Bistro. To recap, eat now, clean your closet later. Now is the time for whatever turns you on at Lumiere Place. Visit LumierePlace.com for more info. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
Before they sit down to play tonight, they're talking poker with you right now. Live from Lumiere Place Casino and Hotel in downtown St. Louis, here are Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan KFNS.
We're not in downtown St. Louis for this show. We are at an event that was sponsored by Lumiere and by Dennis, a Basket of Hope charity at Whitmore Country Club in St. Charles, Missouri. But back at Lumiere Place, Legends in Concert is going on Wednesdays through Sundays, 7 shows a week. They've got people who do Elton John and Janet Jackson and Lionel Richie and Madonna and the Blues Brothers. Tickets are just $15. You can get them through Ticketmaster or at the Lumiere Gift Shop. And they've also got another show coming up in just a few weeks. Travis Tritt will be performing in the Lumiere Theater on November 13th, and tickets for that show are on sale now. This portion of the show is brought to you by the Poker Players Alliance, the PPA.org, the website to go to find out how you can support the people who support you and me and the rest of the poker players worldwide when it comes to fighting for our rights in the courts and in the legislatures and in the capital of the United States to make poker legal in every form. There was just a ruling this week in a case in North Carolina involving some guys who got busted in a home game. 24 people charged in a police gambling raid on a private home in 2006. They got a very positive ruling from a circuit judge this week who said poker is a game of skill, not of luck, and they should not have been busted for illegal gaming. That's
kudos
a good one
that,
right
judge,
there.
Absolutely.
And that's what the PPA fights for. ThePPA.org is the website. Now, we've got only about 3 minutes left here. Time to just squeeze in a quick segment with the poker coach, Joe McGowan. Hi, Joe. How are you?
I'm doing well, Paul. How are you?
Good. What do you got for us tonight?
Well, I want to maybe put you slightly on the spot. A lot of times you call up and, you know, we talk and you have a question for me. I don't get to prepare, and I don't like it too often. So I want to hit you with,
okay,
as a poker player,
yeah,
would you say that you run good, bad, average? What would you say, you know, with all the poker that you play, tournaments, cash games, I know you mainly play cash, what do you think you run more good or bad in general compared to most?
I'll be completely honest with you. I've had a mixture of all three of those. I have streaks of running good. I have streaks of running bad. There are times when I'm playing bad. There are times where the deck is hitting me and I'm doing well. I think, to be honest with you, I'm getting a mixture of those.
Okay. Ask me.
What do you say about yourself, Joe?
Horrible.
you're running.
Horrible. I run terrible. I run the worst on the planet as a poker player.
Now, wait a second, Joe. You are a very successful, high-limit cash games player who has been doing very, very well for yourself for years.
Yeah.
So you must just be running bad right now.
No, I'm kind of half kidding. In my own mind, I run horrible. But realistically, and I really keep track of it, I probably run average, and I'm sure there's times when I do run well.
Wouldn't you say the same, Dennis? It comes and goes?
Oh, it absolutely does. And that's one of the keys to playing deep into a tournament is basically to survive with your chips intact through those areas when you're really card dead, because
yeah,
we all get them.
Yep.
You know, be able to play, be able to maintain it by playing your position, by stealing some pots, by whatever it takes so that you have decent chips when you actually do catch the hands.
But everybody's going to run bad, right, Joe?
Yeah, I mean, I think in general, most poker players, when they sit at the table, the losing players feel like the winning players are just running good. And I have a friend of mine, you know, you get friendly with people. Like, you guys have your regular game for years. You're friends with those guys in some way. You know, they might be your poker buddies, but you probably consider them friends on a certain level. I ran into a friend of mine that I've played with for the last 4 years. It was about a year ago. I might have bumped into him at Costco, and we start talking. He's like, you know, I lost about $140,000 last year in the game. I'm like, geez, that's terrible. And I won't say his name, of course. I'm like, you know, what do you think that is? He's like, well, I actually know what it is. I'm like, oh, well, what is it? He's like, just unlucky. And I thought, this is horrible. I thought he was telling a joke, so I burst out laughing. And then I realized he was serious, and I felt terrible, and I tried to dig out of it. And, you know, quite frankly, in my opinion, you know, he's a bad player, you know, and it's not unlucky. And
yeah,
it's very difficult at times to be honest with yourself if you feel that, are you truly unlucky? You know, it's like a bad beat story. You know, my little theory on bad beat stories, unless it's Dennis that's online and it's documented, you can go back and look at it, most bad beat stories, 50% of them are lies, you know, and I kind of joke with that, but that's what I believe. You know, and 25% might be you misplayed the hand, and then 25% might be a true, real bad beat story. But I have another friend as well that played for a couple years, and I bumped into him today, and he said, Joe, I kind of gave up the game. I kept track for the last 2 years. I made about $2,000 last year. Made about $1,500 the year before.
Because he's just running bad. And Joe, I got to cut you off because we're running out of time.
Sure.
We'll pick this up on a future show because I think this is a great topic.
You
and Dennis are both off to London in a couple of days. Dennis is going to be playing in the World Series of Poker Europe and then in the EPT events. We'll be live from Lumiere next week again. I'm Paul Harris. This is the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and thechipleader.com.